Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast with your host, Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. A, dare we say, entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how we can best make Michigan's political machine work for the people. And now, live from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's Pat Johnston.
Yeah! Welcome to the Left of Lansing podcast. I am Pat Johnston. If you're listening to LOL for the first time, let me first thank you and welcome you to the Left of Lansing podcast, of course. And let me explain that this podcast is devoted to highlighting the progressive resistance against the extreme right-wing agenda that has dominated the state of Michigan for decades. The conservative agenda has enjoyed many victories in Michigan ever since I graduated high school back in 1994, 25 years ago. Part of the reason is the corporate media structure. I mean, that's part of the reason why I think the conservative agenda has dominated here in Michigan for years. Many corporate radio stations across the state give the right wing the microphone to promote a right wing laissez-faire agenda on a daily basis. And for years, it was impossible for liberals to get their voices heard on radio and TV. And actually, it still is. And that is why I decided to provide this podcast. One, well, I love broadcasting. Two, podcasting is the perfect way to bypass the corporate radio structure. Although the corporate media are beginning to use this podcast platform as well. But podcasting, like many other podcasters out there, allow me to share my opinions without having to worry or watch what I say. I always laugh how the right wing has been attacking the millennial and Generation Z voters by calling them snowflakes. You've probably heard that. You know, for some reason, just because the younger generation believes it's time that we turn the page on racism, Confederate statues, misogyny, homophobia, Islamophobia, xenophobia, and general hate, right-wing conservatives label them as snowflakes. Yet, it's been my near 20 years of experience in radio that right-wing Americans are the true snowflakes. They're the ones who cannot accept a changing society, and they're the ones who lose their minds whenever their worldview is challenged. I remember many years ago being told by someone who had been in radio for years, many more years than I had been in radio, that if I continue to attack business, then I wouldn't make it very long in the radio business. Now, I was given this exhortation after railing against the banksters in the aftermath of the financial crisis last decade. I felt like I was on pretty solid ground to attack Wall Street, considering how the big banks caused one of the greatest financial disasters this country had seen. And I thought I was on solid ground to attack the politicians who not only voted to deregulate the financial services industry, which caused the financial crisis, but I thought I was also on solid ground to keep attacking those politicians who continued to back the banks, despite those banks taking trillions of taxpayer bailout money. Apparently, I guess I was not on solid ground. And I was told that attacking any business, even if it's Wall Street, was bad radio business. Maybe that opinion was true. I mean, yeah, sure, I understood. If you are a corporate radio station relying on advertising, perhaps the person shining a light on the revolving door between big business and politicians isn't exactly what the corporate radio structure wants to air. But I also think that the corporate radio structure is missing out by dismissing the outright anger that's in the electorate over how powerful interests continue to operate on a different plane than the rest of us. And you know, that's why I started this Left of Lansing podcast. I felt progressivism needed a voice to give light to the hard work progressive politicians and activists are performing on a daily basis here in Michigan. I felt like that medium was lacking, and so I decided to provide this podcast. Now, of course, I'm not the only one. Just last week, I had Chris Savage from the Progressive Michigan website, Eclectablog, on the podcast. And he's also got a terrific podcast called the GOTMFV Show. I mean, it's great that there are a few of us using the podcasting platform to get the Michigan Progressive Voice out to the masses. See, we're bypassing the corporate structure. That's the way it can be done. I mean, I think that's one reason why progressives do very well on the internet. I think that's one reason why Barack Obama did very well in 2008, was that he realized that progressives were dominating on the internet. They were bypassing the corporate structure. And this is something that I'm going to keep doing on a weekly basis, because I believe that here in Michigan is where change can happen immediately. Yes, Donald Trump's regime is wrecking our institutions and freedoms on a daily basis. And we fought hard to at least put up a stalemate in Washington by giving Democrats control of the House. I mean, that was big. But it's here in our home state of Michigan where we can enact change faster than what happens in Washington. As we've witnessed with the attack on women's freedom to choose what they want to do with their bodies, having political power in this state can go a long way. For years, I felt like that some liberal voters tended to forget that, yes, while winning the presidency is important, we forgot the importance that state politics played on a daily basis. And that's why we had to endure 12 years of John Engler and his disastrous policies. And while we had Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm for 8 years, she had to deal with the Republican legislature, which was devoted to blocking her. Then we endured 8 years of the Rick Snyder administration. Now, that was an administration that moved wealth from hardworking Michiganders back up to his rich corporate donor base. It was an administration that gutted workers' bargaining rights. It was an administration that didn't care about women's rights. It was an administration that took away political power from cities. It was an administration that caused and then subsequently covered up the Flint water crisis. And it was an administration that declared war on working Michiganders by forcing those on Medicaid to undergo costly drug testing. But we saw what happened once people became aware of how destructive these right-wing policies had been to their home state. Younger people got involved, ran for office, for example. They were tired of watching the same old happen, while their generation had to deal with the ramifications of a deteriorating environment, massive student loans, less teacher pay, struggling schools, jacked up roads and highways, being told of a strong economy while struggling to live paycheck to paycheck, anti-science legislation hurting all Michiganders, an oil pipeline in the Straits of Mackinac that could cause serious economic disaster, a gross pay gap between men and women, little help for childcare, expensive health insurance, forcing many to rely on GoFundMe sites to raise money for emergency surgeries, and watching a non-transparent right-wing government in Lansing fighting not for the people that it's purported to care about. Whew. Now, one of those millennials who decided to leave the sidelines and make immediate change by both running and winning a state Senate seat last fall is Mallory McMorrow. Now, she will be my guest on next week's podcast to talk about her first few months in Lansing and the challenges that she and her fellow progressives face in the Republican-led legislature, which is trying to prevent Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer from getting any real political victories. So, Senator McMorrow is my guest next week. As for this week, hey, for the first time, I'm going solo. That's right. Hey, I mean, one of the reasons I started this podcast was so I could talk freely about Michigan and national politics. And this week, I'm going to do just that. Don't worry, everybody. It's okay. I'm an Associated Press and Michigan Association of Broadcasters award winner. That's right. You are listening to an award-winning broadcaster. Okay, maybe it didn't sound like that, but it's true. I am an award-winning broadcaster. Now, I'm not meaning to brag. Well, maybe a little, but I sort of like talking. That's what I do. Like Trump, I can also talk about Michigan's Great Lakes and their record deepness. Record deepness. Oh, or you know what? I could be like Republican Senator Mitt Romney. Didn't he once talk about Michigan's tall trees? I could do that too. I can also provide more content for you on leftoflansing.com. That's leftoflansing.com. Give it a visit since I provide all my podcasts on that website. You can also follow me on Twitter. That's at Left of Lansing, and also on the Facebook. Oh, and you can hear the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, Radio Public, and on Google. Please subscribe when you listen to the podcast. All right, coming up in a moment, a Tea Party Michigan Republican goes rogue and joins progressive voices who are demanding impeachment hearings to begin in the U.S. House. But the DeVos family is not taking this defection lightly. And my Republican state representative is running a primary challenge because how dare anyone go against the dear leader? How dare you go against the dear leader? And in the last call, I might surprise some of my fellow Michigan progressives when it comes to this Fiat Chrysler deal to build plants around the Detroit area. I might be a tad bit cynical on this overall deal. Is that simply my classic Gen X cynicism getting the best of me? Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to LOL. I'll be back with more in just a moment.
It's the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Rumor has it, if you want to get Pat really fired up, just tell him Ringo Starr is just an average drummer. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Now, back to Pat.
Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. I'm Pat Johnston. We learned this week, you know, that Treasury Secretary and teen heartthrob Steve Mnuchin announced that the $20 bill featuring Harriet Tubman will not be released until 2028. It was supposed to be released in 2020. Mnuchin's predecessor had planned on having the new bill, which would have replaced racist President Andrew Jackson, Trump's favorite president, by the way. But Mnuchin is suddenly citing security concerns for the delay. Right. The richest country in the world just can't figure out how to make the new $20 bill with a black woman's face on it without the fear of counterfeit? Right. By all means, let's keep a woman who fought against slavery and is a Civil War hero off our currency so we can keep Andrew Jackson's mug on the $20 bill, reminding us how he facilitated the Trail of Tears, leading to the deaths of thousands of Native Americans. Is that what Trump means when he says he wants to make America great again? If so, count me out. Well, one more thing. Well, nice job making millions, Mnuchin, while with Sears. As Sears went bankrupt, hey, at least you made money off other people's suffering. Some things never change. Let me give a quick thank you to friend of the podcast, Sean McBrarity, from Clean Water Action Michigan for picketing the Michigan Chamber of Commerce's environmental forum the other day. Clean Water Action is demanding the chamber to back a law that requires companies to pay for polluting Michigan's water. Now, why should it be on the people who did nothing wrong to fix a corporation's pollution? As the saying goes, they love to capitalize the profits and socialize the disasters. The Union of Concerned Scientists wrote this week that if 3M really, really cared about PFAS in our water systems, it would stop lying about the damage it caused water systems throughout the country and that the company would decide to clean up their mess. As I talked about last week, the Detroit Free Press reported how 3M knew for decades that it was pouring these dangerous chemicals into our waters, dangerous chemicals known as PFAS, and they did nothing about it. And that's why Michigan Attorney General Dana Nessel announced that she has opened up bids for special assistance to look into whether lawsuits are possible. Let's hope they are, because companies should be held accountable if they poison us, allegedly. Like I said, if we learn that ISIS was pushing PFAS into our water systems, this country would work faster to fix the problem. Instead, the Trump regime is working on lowering drinking water standards because, of course, it's not a shock. I mean, think about it. Think about it. Trump doesn't care about the Great Lakes, which is why he proposes to slash Great Lakes funding every year, despite the fact that he loves the deepness of our lakes. So thanks to Sean McBrady and our good friends with the Clean Water Action Michigan for putting the pressure on those responsible for harming us. Speaking of Trump, a Michigan Republican congressman announced his decision that it's time for Congress to impeach Trump. Oh, yes, the I word. Justin Amash, a five-term Republican from Cascade Township, joined 25 other Democrats over the weekend, including Dearborn Democrat Rashida Tlaib, in calling for Congress to perform its constitutional duty and to hold impeachment hearings. Amash, a rabid Tea Party Republican, made the announcement during a tweet storm last weekend. He blamed Attorney General Bill Barr for misrepresenting the Mueller report's findings. Well, that was obvious. And he said that the Mueller report identifies multiple examples of conduct satisfying all of the elements of obstruction of justice, and undoubtedly any person who is not the president of the United States would be indicted based on such evidence. Why it took Amash and not the entire Democratic establishment to reach that conclusion is an indictment on the National Democrats' unwillingness to stand up for principle, at least the leadership for the Democrats. Now, I'm not saying Democrats are guilty of that all the time, but on this issue, it seems to me that many are running scared, except for a few strong progressives like Congresswoman Tlaib. But I'm giving Amash some credit here because he's standing up for the rule of law while knowing full well the Michigan and National Republican Party are going to come after him. In fact, the DeVos family, has already announced that they are dropping their support for Amash, not surprisingly, since Betsy DeVos is dutifully trying to ruin the nation's education system by trying so hard to enact her failed Michigan policies onto the rest of the country. And right after Amash made his announcement, my state representative, Republican Jim Lauer, said that he would primary Amash. Now, to prove how Trumpian he is, Lauer said that he backed Trump, that he continued to back Trump in 2016 after Trump's grabbed them by the pussy access Hollywood remarks. Boy, that's certainly profiles and courage there, Jim. But Lauer's primary challenge just proves, no matter what, once you leave the cult and resign from following the dear leader's influence, you are to be primaried. You must be ousted from office. But Amash is seeing corruption, and he wants it to stop. Corruption is kind of the Republican playbook. As we also learned this week, how Republican State Representative Larry Inman of Traverse City was indicted for soliciting a bribe, extortion, and lying to the FBI. What is it about lying to the FBI and Republicans? I don't get it. For some reason, they're always doing that. Do you remember when Republicans used to stand for law and order, allegedly? Inman tried to extort a carpenters union ahead of the state GOP's vote to repeal the prevailing wage law in 2018. Inman was so dumb because he texted his extortion to the union. Now, the union didn't respond, and Inman voted to repeal the law anyway. But thanks to the text messages, the extortion was there for everyone to see. And you know, it's strange, but the prevailing wage law paid construction workers a decent wage for their work. Naturally, repealing it hurt that effort. Because, as always, when it comes down to it, Republicans just simply despise workers. That's us, ladies and gentlemen. Now, State House Republicans have kicked Inman out of their caucus, but they have yet to expel him. But how can they? They're on record supporting Trump, who is running one of the most unethical and non-transparent administrations of all time. They love him, and they love how he operates. He is their dear leader. Larry Inman was simply following the MO of today's Republican Party. And as I've always said, Trump is Republican, and Republicans are Trump. Now, Democrats, grow a spine and hold impeachment hearings today. No, not tomorrow, today. Thank you, Congresswoman Tlaib, for leading on the impeachment issue since day one. And while I think I disagree with Justin Amash at least 92% of the time, thank you, Congressman Amash, for doing the right thing. One more note. Amash said in an interview this week that he believes the Tea Party really wasn't about economic issues, that he's now learning that it was really just against President Barack Obama. No way. That is new information to me. I would have never suspected such a thing. Really, you're telling me that the Tea Party was never really about economic principles, that it was only against the black family in the White House? I am shocked. I am dismayed. I cannot believe that this is happening. You cannot tell me that. This is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. Upset with Pat? Want to give him a piece of your mind? Or do you actually want to praise Pat for everything that he does? Yeah, right. Just email him, leftoflansing@gmail.com.
Okay, now get ready, everybody, for me to surprise you a bit in this edition of the Left of Lansing Last Call. Governor Whitmer joined Fiat Chrysler officials earlier this week, touting the auto company's plan to make a major $4.5 billion investment for five spots in the Metro Detroit area, in which the company says will create around 6,000 jobs. Now, according to MLive's Emily Lawler, plans call for a new assembly plant in Detroit, along with other upgrades across the Metro Detroit region, in an effort to roll out production of its popular Jeep and Ram brands. Lawler reports the company's first move will be on the new Detroit plants, where it plans to build the next generation of Jeep Grand Cherokees and an all-new three-row Jeep SUV. FCA, Fiat Chrysler Automobiles, expects vehicles to start rolling off the new Detroit line by the end of 2020. Now, Whitmer applauded the investment, noting it was the largest private automaker investment deal in the United States in the past decade. Whitmer said that it's fitting that the state that put the world on wheels is where we will build the cars of the future. Now, Chad Livingood from Cranes Business Detroit says that in total, FCA will get up to $319 million in various taxpayer incentives, including tax breaks, land, employee recruitment, and job training and cash grants. Now, when asked about these major incentives that the state is providing Fiat Chrysler, Governor Whitmer countered that the spinoff jobs created from this investment will be well worth it, essentially. Now, let's talk about these incentives, because we must highlight that aspect of this deal since it was done behind closed doors. Let's be real. As the Metro Times reported, and by the way, the Metro Times did a fantastic job this week covering the story, it says that the Detroit City Council passed this controversial land swap deal, which may cost city and state taxpayers more than $270 million and enrich two billionaires, Maddie Maroon and Anthony Sove. It also aimed at creating nearly 5,000 jobs in the city, with one of the highest unemployment rates in the country. The Times says council members who opposed the deal took issue with the FCA's refusal to guarantee that Detroiters will get a certain number of jobs. Instead, the deal says the FCA will make a good faith effort to hire Detroiters after UAW workers are offered the jobs. And in fact, one council member criticized Detroit Mayor Mike Duggan for his handling of the deal, citing the lack of transparency. Now, according to the Metro Times, the powerful real estate mogul family, the Maroon family, of course, they own the Ambassador Bridge and the land all around there, and its company, Crown Enterprises, will receive $43.5 million in cash and 117 acres of land. In return, the Maroons are giving up 82 acres of his property to build the plant. And some of the property that Maroon will receive is prime real estate in Southwest Detroit, and 43.5 acres across the street from the Detroit City Airport. Not bad for the Maroon family. Then there's this Anthony Sove fella. A company connected to Sove bought land adjacent to the Detroit plant site while Mayor Duggan negotiated this deal behind closed doors. This Sove company paid $60,000 for the land and sealed the deal last November, a month before news of the FCA's plans to open the assembly plant broke. Sove is trading that land, which will be turned into parking lots. Now, the Metro Times also notes that Sove has a long history with the mayor that dates back to when Duggan was a deputy county executive. Sove donated more than $9,000 to Duggan's mayoral campaign, and Neil Levin, who is the vice president of Sove Enterprises, contributed another $7,800 to the mayor. So, it appears that Mayor Duggan's closest allies made out quite nicely with this deal. As for Sove, he says that his company really didn't make any money from the deals, but we don't exactly know what happened since everything happened behind closed doors. And this is what angers so many people who aren't on the inside, for those who are not connected. You can understand why someone would be suspicious of how great this deal is purported to be, especially after Detroit got burned by the Little Caesars Arena deal with the Ilitch family, who own both the Red Wings and the Tigers. I mean, the city showered the Ilitches with some $200 million in tax subsidies, but the residents there are still waiting for the area around the arena to be resurrected as part of the deal. That resurrection was promised by the Ilitch family if only they received those tax subsidies. Yet, there's nothing. Instead, all people around that area are seeing are parking lots. A few months ago, I had Jarrett Skorup from the conservative Mackinac Center for Public Policy on the podcast, and while we, of course, disagree on many issues, we both agreed that tax subsidies were a bad way for states to do business. Jared even agreed with progressive stalwart New York Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez when she voiced her opposition to that Amazon facility being built in Queens. Now, tax subsidies tend to promote a race to the bottom. And that's something that Jared and I, we completely agree on. And it seems like that these subsidies, once they are given, they never really seem to come to fruition or help as many people as promised. You remember when former Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker celebrated that Foxconn deal, right? I mean, Wisconsin showered massive subsidies to Foxconn, only to learn that the foreign company would not come through with its promises. I'll be darned. Look, Detroit could definitely use some good news on the jobs front. Jobs are needed, no doubt about that. I was empathetic to the argument that a city like New York could easily survive Amazon pulling up stakes. I mean, but places like Detroit could use any kind of job. It's easy for New York City because, hey, it's New York City. It's huge. They've got lots and lots of businesses there. Unlike Detroit and other Rust Belt cities like Cleveland or Buffalo. So I understand. I completely understand why Governor Whitmer would celebrate this deal because people need work. But forgive me if I'm not exactly celebrating this deal just yet. I hope I'm wrong and that my Generation X cynicism is misplaced. However, I feel my cynicism has some merit, considering what I've seen happen through the years. Prove me wrong, Mayor Duggan, and prove me wrong, FCA. Prove me wrong, because, hey, in the end, I hope I am.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wanderbeats. To hear more, visit wanderbeats.net. That's wanderbeats.net. Now back to Pat Johnston.
Hey, before I finish this episode, let me say a quick shout out to Michigan Democratic Attorney General Denton Essel and Democratic State Representative Brian Elder for trying to protect our children, schools, and basically everyone from a dangerous, extreme, right-wing, anti-science, anti-enlightened minority. First, Representative Elder unveiled a bill this week that requires both public and charter schools to post on their websites and school entrances a sign that says that more than 5% of their student body has not been vaccinated. That is important. Since approximately 3.5% of Michigan school districts obtain waivers for vaccinations on medical or religious grounds, this state has seen an uptick in measles cases. I know, what were the chances? In fact, as Michigan Advances, Susan Demas reports, the measles outbreak was the worst in Michigan in almost 30 years, and as of April, already cost Oakland County $200,000 to fight. The outbreak is scaring some parents with infants so much that they're refusing to let their babies leave the house. Of course, you know, infants aren't immunized until later. And as Representative Elder noted in a statement, this rise in measles cases threatens pregnant women as well. Oh. The anti-vax movement has grown in popularity in dangerous numbers, and it's putting Michigan's children at risk. So, Representative Elder's bill says schools must let parents know if 5% of their school is not vaccinated. No, he's not saying that schools must post the names of those who are not immunized. His bill only requires that schools inform parents if 5% of their kids are not immunized. And so in order to do that, schools must post signs, big signs with big font, informing parents that 5% of their student body have not been vaccinated. Now, that seems reasonable in a time of when an unreasonable minority is putting the majority at risk. Now, Elder's bill is facing some strong resistance, as Demas notes. Why? Well, that's because of House Speaker Lee Chatfield. The Republican Chatfield backed a bill last year that would have given parents even more leeway to refuse vaccinations for their children. The bill didn't make it to the House floor for a vote, but still, Chatfield signaled his support for the dangerous anti-vaxxer crowd. These are the kind of people that are preventing Michigan from progressing into the future, everyone. Please contact State Representative Brian Elder and tell him that you back his bill. And contact Lee Chatfield's office if you can, and let him know that you would like him to announce his support for Elder's bill. It'll help Michigan become a safer and healthier state. You know, those are the kinds of places that people wouldn't mind staying to live in. And thank you to Attorney General Dana Nessel for joining 22 other states and local governments in suing the Trump administration's Health and Human Services Department for allowing health professionals to refuse care on religious grounds. Now, this rule, which takes effect on July 22nd, allows medical professionals the right to deny serving patients due to their religious beliefs on abortions or vaccinations and the like. Again, at a time when Michigan is experiencing its biggest measles outbreak since the 1990s, the Trump regime is trying to make it easier for medical professionals to exacerbate the problem. Thankfully, Attorney General Nessel ain't trying to hear that. You know, it's strange. Again, while the extreme right wing has spent this past month claiming that they value life, this is just another stark example in which they don't care about life. If they did, they'd oppose the Trump regime's rule and demand the regime to better protect our kids. But they sit silently, doing nothing. Well, we are not staying silent. We, Michigan progressives, are making our voices heard. We are not shrinking away from this fight. We are not going to let the minority rule over us anymore. As Barack Obama said back in 2008, we are the change that we've been waiting for. We've witnessed what can happen when we don't stay informed and engaged in the fight. The extreme right wing and its anti-children, anti-working families, and anti-science minority gets control of the political levers when we aren't engaged, threatening to push Michigan back by decades and decades and decades. This right-wing minority is counting on us to stop fighting, but we won't. They're sorely mistaken. They've awakened a sleeping giant of young and old progressives who believe the Enlightenment age didn't end decades ago. They believe it is still continuing. They refuse to believe that we can't continue to progress and make things better for everyone. They refuse to give in to fear and hopelessness. They can't. We can't. Because Michigan is our home. And this is where we progressives are planting our flag of resistance. And part of that resistance is State Senator Mallory McMorrow. She is my guest next week on the Left of Lansing podcast. I cannot wait. In the meantime, as Snoop Dogg once said, so just chill till the next episode. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. That's at Left of Lansing, and to friend Left of Lansing on the Facebook. Email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. Remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan.
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston. Just kidding, this thing isn't researched. And broadcasted by Pat Johnston. Technical assistance provided by the wonderful Dr. Heather. And don't forget to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information and Pat's musical taste, if you can handle it. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.